Howdy partner, welcome back to the Prospecting PA Audio Archive.
Last time, we covered how Pennsylvania got its load gold, the Cornwall type story, the Triassic diabase, the 67,000 ounces from a mine that was really an iron mine. If you missed it, go back and listen. That episode sets the foundation for what we're covering today. Because today, we're flipping the story. We're going up to the northern tier, to the Susquehanna River and all its tributaries. And we're asking a different question. The question prospectors have been asking for 200 years, where did all this gold in my pan come from? And the answer is going to surprise you, because the gold in your pan at Mashopin Creek, or in the Susquehanna at Tunkhannock, or in the Unadilla River in Chenango County, New York, that gold did not come from Pennsylvania. It did not come from New York. It came from Canada, from a place called the Abitibi Greenstone Belt, in Ontario and Quebec, more than 300 miles to the north. It got here in pieces. It got here locked inside boulders of rock that the Laurentide ice sheet picked up, carried south for thousands of years, and then dropped when the ice melted. The gold you find in the Susquehanna Basin is, geologically speaking, a Canadian immigrant. And the story of how it got here is one of the most dramatic geological events in Earth's recent history. Picture this. 26,000 years ago, the last glacial maximum. A continental ice sheet, what geologists call the Laurentide ice sheet, covered everything from the Arctic Ocean down to present-day Long Island, New York, northern New Jersey, and southern Pennsylvania. We're not talking alpine glaciers. We're not talking ice caps. We're talking 2 miles of ice in some places. In Otsego County, New York, right where the user I'm building this for prospects, the ice was about 3,000 feet thick, give or take 1,600 feet. That's 1,000 feet of ice above the highest point in the area. The whole landscape, the whole Catskills, the whole endless mountains, the whole Susquehanna Valley, all of it, buried, pressed down, crushed. For 200 miles north of the ice front, the ground was frozen permafrost. For another 1,000 miles north, it was active ice. The center of the ice sheet, the dome, sat over what's now Hudson Bay. From that dome, ice flowed outward in every direction, north toward the Arctic, east into the Atlantic, west into the prairies, and south, into what is now the United States. Now, here's the part most people get wrong. The Laurentide ice sheet didn't just bulldoze its way south, like a slow-motion wall. It behaved more like a system of valley glaciers that were all connected. As the climate warmed, around 20,000 years ago, the ice started to retreat. And as it retreated, it didn't retreat evenly. It retreated in lobes, in tongues, in fingers of ice that followed the pre-existing river valleys. The Susquehanna Valley became one of those ice tongues. The Delaware Valley became another. The Hudson, the Lackawanna, the Chenango, all of them, ice-filled channels that carried the continental ice south, then east, then south again, in long sinuous fingers that followed the lowest ground. So the ice is moving south. It's 3,000 feet thick in places. It's carrying everything that's been picked up along the way. And here's the key question, where did the gold come from? The answer is the Abitibi Greenstone Belt. That's a geological region in Ontario and Quebec. Actually, two regions, the Abitibi in Quebec and the Wawabitibi in Ontario, that has produced more than 170 million ounces of gold since 1901. It's one of the largest gold-producing regions on Earth. The rocks there are Archean age, 2.7 billion years old, some of the oldest rocks in North America. They're loaded with gold-bearing quartz veins. The veins formed when superheated water circulated through cracks in the ancient volcanic rock and deposited gold as it cooled. When the Laurentide ice sheet formed, it started scraping across those gold-bearing rocks. The ice picked up fragments, boulders, cobbles, sand, silt, including trace amounts of gold that had weathered out of the quartz veins and been incorporated into the local soil and stream gravels over millions of years. The ice carried all of that south, mixing it with debris from every other rock formation it crossed. By the time the ice reached Pennsylvania and New York, it was carrying a dilute but real gold content, flour gold, mostly submillimeter flakes that had been liberated from their host rocks and were now embedded in the glacial till. So the ice retreats. It doesn't go back all at once. It pauses. And during those pauses, it dumps material. The geologists call these pauses ice margin positions or still stands. In the Oneonta area, in the upper Susquehanna Basin, the USGS, and the New York State Geological Survey have identified six distinct ice margin positions.
The Shangum conglomerate is a hard, indurated, quartz-rich rock. It forms the bold rocky bluffs of Kittatinny Mountain, the same ridge you can see from the Delaware Water Gap. The formation is about 2,000 feet thick near the Pahakori Mine. And here's the part that matters, the basal beds of the Shangum Formation contain considerable pyrite, and it is reported that the lower few inches of the rock carry native gold, in places to an alleged value as high as $11 a ton. That's the quote from the New Jersey Geological Survey Bulletin 57, published in 1944. $11 a ton in gold, at 1908 prices. Adjusted for inflation, that's roughly $350 a ton at today's gold prices. That's ore grade. Not high grade, but workable. The bulletin continues, anywhere along the outcrop of the contact between the conglomerate and the Ordovician slate, one can obtain pyrite or that is rich in gold. The contact zone, the boundary between the Shangum conglomerate and the underlying Martinsburg shale of Ordovician age, is where the gold pyrite mineralization sits. It's a strata-bound deposit, restricted to a specific geological horizon, running along the entire outcrop of the contact. The Pahakori Mine sits on the Delaware River, right at the Pennsylvania-New Jersey border, just south of the Delaware Water Gap. The mine was opened by the Dutch in the 1600s as a copper operation. The property changed hands multiple times. In 1865, the New Jersey Mining Company tried to work it. In 1882, it was reorganized. And then, in 1901, the property was acquired by the Montgomery Gold Leaf Mining Company, which was specifically organized to mine the gold at Pahakori. For 10 years, from 1901 to 1911, the Montgomery Gold Leaf Mining Company tried to make the Pahakori gold deposit work. They sank shafts. They drove adits. They built a stamp mill. They processed ore. The geological evidence was there, the contact zone between the Shangum conglomerate and the underlying Ordovician slate, with pyrite or carrying gold values. But the company struggled. The deposit was real but thin. The gold values were inconsistent. The infrastructure was expensive. By 1911, the Montgomery Gold Leaf Mining Company had failed, and the property was abandoned. The New Jersey Geological Survey, in Bulletin 57, summarized the geological situation with clinical precision. The basal beds of the Shangum Formation contain pyrite, the contact zone is mineralized, and gold is present. The Montgomery Gold Leaf Mining Company attempted to work it and failed. End of story, as far as the official record goes. But here's what's interesting. The Pahakori Mine sits on one end of the Shangum Gold Pyrite Belt. The belt extends along the entire outcrop of the Shangum Formation, from Port Jervis, New York, southwest through the Delaware Water Gap, and on into eastern Pennsylvania. That's potentially 100 miles of strike length. The Pahakori Mine is the only place along that entire strike length that was seriously worked for gold. Every other location along the belt, and there are dozens of locations where the contact zone is exposed, has been essentially ignored by modern prospectors. So why does this matter for a modern prospector based in Pennsylvania or southern New York? First, because the gold is real. The New Jersey Geological Survey documented it. The Montgomery Gold Leaf Mining Company worked it. The gold values at the contact zone are not enormous, but they're real, and the contact is exposed at multiple locations along the strike. Second, because the geological setting is permissive. The Shangum conglomerate is hard, well-indurated, erosion-resistant rock. It forms ridges. The contact with the underlying Martinsburg shale is exposed in road cuts, in stream valleys, in quarries. You don't have to dig deep. You can literally walk the outcrop and sample the basal beds of the Shangum, looking for pyrite and assaying for gold. Third, because the historical exploitation is 100 years old. The Montgomery Gold Leaf Mining Company failed in 1911. The geological understanding of how to explore for strata-bound gold pyrite deposits has advanced enormously since then. Modern assay techniques, modern structural geology, modern geochemical sampling, none of this was available to the Montgomery Company. The Pahakwari deposit might not be economic at today's gold prices with the techniques available in 1908. But it might be economic with the techniques available in 2026. Or it might not. But nobody has done the modern work to find out. The Shangum Gold Pyrite Belt is the underrated gold story of the Northeast. It's a 100-mile-long structural target. It crosses three states. The geology is exposed and accessible. The historical record is clear. And yet, there's been essentially no modern exploration for gold along this belt. The Pennsylvania Geological Survey has no active project on the Shangum in Pennsylvania. The New Jersey Geological Survey hasn't updated Bulletin 57 since 1944. The New York State Geological Survey has done some work on the Shangum in the Ellenville area, where there's been intermittent small-scale gold mining, but no comprehensive modern survey. This is a real research opportunity. A modern gold prospector with a rock hammer, a hand lens, a gold pan, and a willingness to walk the contact zone could find things. The Pahakwari Mine area is on public land, part of the Delaware Water Gap National Recreation Area, which is administered by the National Park Service. The Delaware River itself is accessible. The old mine road is still there. The mine dumps are still there. The contact zone is exposed in the streambed of the mine run, which flows into the Delaware. The catch, metal detecting and mineral collecting on NPS land requires a permit. The regulations are strict. The Park Service is wary of prospectors because of the long history of illegal collecting in the area. But for someone willing to work with the NPS, willing to follow the rules, willing to document what they find, this is a target that has not seen modern eyes. So that's the Watchung Mountain surprise, partner. The Watchung copper mines have trace gold, but no Cornwall-type deposit because the host rock is wrong. The Shangum Gold Pyrite Belt is a completely different story, Silurian conglomerate, 430 million years old, contact zone with the underlying Ordovician slate, gold documented by the New Jersey Geological Survey, attempted exploitation by the Montgomery Gold Leaf Mining Company in 1901-1911, and then essentially forgotten for 114 years. Is it the next Comstock lode? No. But it might be the most underrated gold target in the Northeast. A 100-mile-long belt. A documented gold content. A permissive geological setting. And almost no modern exploration work. That's it for this episode of the Prospecting PA Audio Archive. Next time, we'll talk about how to actually find gold in a pan, the technique, the equipment, the reading the water skills that turn a day on the creek into a productive day. Until then, keep your eyes on the ground and your pans in the creek. This is Agent Skookum, signing off.